to be humble, to be kind. It is a giving of peace in your mind to a stranger, to a friend. To give in such a way that has no end. We are love. We are one. We are how we treat each other when the day is done. We are peace. We are war. We are how we treat each other and nothing more. And to be bold. That the heart can still be saved, and the darkness can come quick. The danger's in the anger and in the hanging on to it. We are love. We are one.
Good morning and welcome, everyone. And I guess I should be saying good afternoon or good evening, depending on where you are in the world. But thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to the Friday Morning Show with C.A. Brooks here on 1-2 Radio. And we have some debate about what the name of the show really is. We noticed that on the banner it now says A Study of A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks. And I guess that's true, too. And it probably reflects my changing thoughts about what we're doing with this particular hour. But on today's show, we will be discussing A Course in Miracles with writer, web designer, and ACIM teacher Bruce Rawls. Now, ordinarily, Bruce and I suggest a workbook lesson or maybe a section of the text or maybe a part of the manual that we want to look at, the manual for teachers. And this morning, or rather this week, we've been kind of going back and forth with some ideas. And even though we do have a few suggestions, like, for instance, lesson, I think, 191 that we can look at, the truth is we're really looking at some ideas today. And one of those ideas is a shift in identity, finding our identity, knowing our identity. And that leads right into another really important thing about the course, which is the gentle teaching and curriculum of the course of the Holy Spirit, kind of guiding us along a path or letting our lives be a curriculum. Now, I will tell you the reason this has really come up, and you know, to me, life is just so synchronistic, just all the time. So the synchronicity for me this week really has been, I've mentioned many times that I'm reading Ken Wapnick's book, The Journey Home, which is an exploration of what the course calls the obstacles to peace. And I will admit it's kind of a heavy book and kind of, you know, some heavy stuff, but it hits you right between the eyes. But one of the things that really has come out in what I've been reading this week is identity, identity, because everything we do is really based on who we believe we are. We're very consistent creatures that way. You know, we act according to who we really believe that we are. And in a course, a lot of its purpose is literally to help us make a shift in that identity and to remember specifically that we are human beings having, or rather we're spiritual beings having a human experience and helping us find a way that despite what our five senses tell us to remember our identity as a spiritual being. And of course, that is a very, very difficult thing to do when, you know, we are barraged by our senses that tell us one thing or another. You know, it doesn't make sense. It's not real to say that's not what my eyes hear or my eyes see, or that's not what my ears hear. And so that's a difficult kind of thing to do. But, you know, if you've read or if you're interested in the great philosophers, you know, the great teachers of the ages, all of them have been telling us that. So that's something that has really kind of come to my attention this week, is how important it is to look at our identity. Now, the other piece of synchronicity there is that as an astrologer, which I love, Chiron, the asteroid, made a move this week. And Chiron only changes signs, well, it's been in Pisces, what, 7 or 8 years or something like that. And it's now going to be in Aries for another till 2027. So Chiron, when it makes a change, astrologically speaking, when it moves from one energy pattern, one constellation of stars to another one, and in this case from Pisces to Aries, there's a shift in what we feel on the conscious collective. And Chiron is often known as the wounded healer. And it tends to resonate with where we feel wounded. And could there be anything more kind of analogous to A Course in Miracles and I am the victim of the world I see than Chiron, who says, I'm wounded. It's not my fault. I can't help it. And I just have to be this way because this is who I am. So as we look at Chiron, you know, as I've been looking at Chiron, especially in Aries, you know, once again, it always reminds me of A Course in Miracles because it reminds me of that idea. Where do we perceive ourselves as being victimized? Where do we perceive ourselves as being wounded? So I thought, you know, as I was thinking about that this week, especially in Aries, because Chiron in Aries, even astrologically, you know, most people are not going to associate Chiron with A Course in Miracles. Now, they may associate it with spirituality, but, you know, I can't help it. I put the two of them together. And a Chiron in Aries is a profound lack or loss of confidence, a loss of self-worth, feeling that we're undeserving. And so what is it? It's a search for self-identity in Aries. So think about that. If that's the conscious collective, if that's what the curriculum is going to look like, at least probably for me as an astrologer over the next, what, 8-9 years, then this is a very important concept, the search for self-identity. And of course, the gift is when we will follow along with a curriculum, we find out what Chiron has always been teaching us, which is, guess what? This is an illusion. I mean, I've always said that astrologically about Chiron. It's not about where we're weak and we're wounded. It's where we think we're weak and vulnerable and wounded. And so the gift is really embracing our true identity. So as an astrologer, I've been talking a lot about that this week. And so I kind of wanted to weave that into the conversation because I'm hearing it from Ken Watnick in reading his book, Identity, Identity, Shift of Identity. And then I'm feeling it with Chiron as I'm really doing my work as an astrologer. So that's what kind of suggested today. And Bruce, true to course, he's such a researcher. He comes back with all this information about identity. And there was just so much there. And Bruce, thank you so much for doing that. But one of the lessons he did come up with was lesson 191, which is I am the holy son of God himself. So if you have the workbook for students, you may want to turn to lesson 191. But the other thing is, and Bruce, I think you got all your info, and welcome, Bruce. Thanks for being on the show today.
Thanks, CA, as always. I'm just, you know, plumbing the depths of all the fascinating things you're sharing. So anyway, yeah, of course. Yes. Welcome. Thank you.
Well, and yeah. A lot of the information, like some of the things you sent me, you found that directly on the website, Foundation for A Course in Miracles, by searching identity, correct?
That was actually the Miracle Distribution Center,
which
has a great search feature. And hopefully the ACIM.org, the Foundation for Inner Peace site, will have something similar. The new site, which is getting ever closer to being launched, will have a really wonderful workbook search functionality that will be unique when it's launched. And hopefully the text and manual will follow shortly after that. But the timing's not established on that yet. But anyway, right now you can find the three volumes, the text, the workbook, and the manual for teachers, all on the Miracle Distribution Center, and that's searchable. So I use that a lot, actually.
Okay, well, and now that you say that, of course, I recognize, yes, that is where I was when I clicked on all that stuff.
Yeah, it's miraclecenter.org if you're looking for that. And the other two, of course, the primary websites are acim.org for Foundation for Inner Peace and facim.org for Foundation for A Course in Miracles. And highly encourage supporting, you know, all those efforts. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which kind of reminds me, this is a total aside, but I might as well ask you. Somebody, I was in a used bookstore this past week and somebody came up to me and he was holding what looked like, it was an original copy of what's called the text.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, and look, literally like all these old photocopies. And he goes, look at this. He goes, have you ever read this? I said, no, I haven't. And I said, and you know, I'm not an expert on it. I said, but my understanding of what that is that's one of the original copies, probably one of the original distributions that Helen and Bill did after they had typed up all those notes. You know, they had what, 7 or 9, you know, 3-ring binders, and they had typed up all those notes of the voice and what she had heard. That is the unedited version of what became A Course in Miracles. And I said, but truthfully, I said, as a writer, I have always been more interested in reading the edited version. Because I said, you know, I do know that there was always a lot of controversy over the fact that many people believe the text was the original. I said, but I don't want somebody reading the original of my documents. I mean, I would prefer that as the writer, I had the opportunity to go back and, you know, edit and make it more readable. And I said, exactly. So the text has never held any interest for me. And so, but I did tell him, I said, but on the other hand, that could maybe be a valuable document in the future. If you hold on to it, maybe you could sell it on eBay. I said, but that's up to you. That's up to you. I said, it's never held any interest for me. But what do you think?
Well, I have a similar viewpoint. I use the FIP version, which is really, you know, the only authorized publisher from the scribe since 1975. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's not so much that as it's just like you say. And if I was the author, I wouldn't want my rough drafts being the ones passed around. I'd like the, you know, the ones that I put a lot of care in, you know, TLC into, you know, making a nicely edited version that had exactly what was intended to be shared, you know.
Out there. Right.
So, but not that there's anything wrong with the rough notes, and from a scholarly standpoint, why not? You know, if you have that kind of interest academically or whatever. But then there is the Circle of Atonement. I believe Robert Perry's organization, I think, has this new, you know, huge version that has, you know, it's the expanded, you know, with all these cross references and just, you know, it's a wealth of stuff. Bob Rosenthal, who's one of the co-presidents of the Foundation for Inner Peace, did a really nice review of it, and it was very, you know, very thoughtful. And basically, you know, I came to this conclusion that you know, it's probably a great reference for people who are doing that kind of work with it. Uh-huh. But for the average course student, it could be just a distraction to go into all the minutiae and the details. And actually kind of reminded me of an episode of Colbert's show the other day when he was talking to James Comey on his show. I don't know if you caught that episode or if you watched that show. But anyway, in James Comey's recent book, he has some you know, essentially sensational details about our current president's physical appearance, and a lot of reporters have jumped all over that and ignored the rest of the book, apparently, which I haven't read. In fact, I haven't read either of those books since we're jumping topics. But what crossed my mind is what Colbert did when he was interviewing Comey on his show. He said, "Well, if that causes, you know, a dissension or troubles you," and I'm paraphrasing greatly, you know, he says, "Well, you can just do this," and he rips those 2 pages out of the book and crumples up and throws it behind his desk, you know, kind of thing. And it reminded me of an episode that Bill Thetford reportedly had with some in a course study group toward the end of his tenure here. and there was 2 course students arguing over what a particular passage meant. And he says, if this comes between you and your brother, you know, then
and just cut it out.
And he, just crumple it up, throw it over your shoulder and just get on with it kind of thing. It's not worth it. It's the, you know, and I think that really ties, I mean, that's sort of an aside, but it really does tie back into our topic of identity, because I think the way back to an identity that really is unshakable, that does have a perfect, unyielding, unalterable peace and innocence and joyousness to it, is the identity that we approach by thinking in terms of shared interests and a shared identity. What is the being that we not only all have and are? Well, that's in the mind, and that's why A Course in Miracles leads inexorably back to looking at the contents of the mind. And you know, as you were kind of prefacing our conversation this morning with some comments about identity, which were right on, I was thinking, well, how do people recognize each other? Generally, it's, you know, a name and a face, you know, is usually the kind of the cliches. Well, those things are all seemingly unique for each person, right? And mm-hmm. and well, you know, ideally, but with Photoshop and 7+ billion people, it's kind of, you know, you have to oftentimes have other distinguishing things. you know, the idea is really, well, how important is the difference and how important is the sameness? And I think that if we really kind of look honestly at the contents of our minds, the thoughts that we have that make a big deal over the differences, and, you know, even advertisers take advantage of this, you know, they have the exclusive offers, you know, be the first on your block or be the only one who has X, Y, or Z, you know. It's always about distinction and ultimately divisiveness that, you know, lures the ego into those snares. But what really brings us peace is when we, you know, overcome the barriers and the walls and the, whether they're literal physical ones or psychological ones, but when we, you know, transcend those boundaries in the mind that seem to separate and isolate each other. You know, those are the moments I think we really truly treasure if we kind of look back honestly at what is in our world as a reflection of, you know, wonderful experiences. Those are the things that we probably remember most fondly. And I think those are the exact sort of, you know, ideas that the Course in Miracles is suggesting that we use as our, you know, as a technique for getting back to the mind and back to the identity in our mind that really doesn't make a big deal out of differences. In fact, has a profound transformative experience each time we really truly look at our identity as being no different from everyone else's. And I think that's oftentimes born out of compassion when we, you know, kind of using the old cliche of everyone's fighting a hard battle, so be kind, you know, mm-hmm. paraphrased as always. But those are the things that I think really give us an opportunity to look at when we see opportunities to see that, you know, the differences really ultimately make us unhappy when we choose them. And when we release our white-knuckled grip on them, that's when we find that suddenly, almost magically, we are happier when we don't make such a big deal out of you know, our way and our interests and my special needs and yada yada. Not that to say that on the level of form we don't have, you know, wants and needs that appear to be different from others, but when we can work toward recognizing in our minds where those investments in our identity have caused us, you know, unimaginable grief, you know, that I think can be really helpful. So anyway, mm-hmm. I've rambled on a bit now.
No. And, you know, going back to the Urtext, I mean, one of the things I said to, like I said, I did tell him, I said, this could be, you know, actually valuable in the future mm-hmm. because it would have been one of the original copies. Like I said, I mean, you could even see it. It would be difficult to read. I mean, you could tell it was like off an old photocopier, you know, or maybe even whatever predated photocopies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the typewriter ribbon and all that, I just thought, no, thanks. I don't want to do it. But if you were a scholar and or you want, and I told him too, I said, if you really want to get into the mind of Helen, I said, there's probably a lot of things in there that are personal, because that's exactly what she took out, or some of the things that are personal. But I said, but on the other hand, I said, if you think about it in terms of, okay, this is the original, this is the one handed by, you know, handed down by God to Moses, you know, like the Ten Commandments, I said, then I think you're missing the whole point of A Course in Miracles, because it's not about form.
Right, right.
It's about content. It's not exactly. about form. It's not about, I have the original one and nobody else does. I said, so keep that in mind, you know, what's your intention. But I said, if you want to, you know, if you really want to study this, and or if you want to hold on to it because maybe it'll be valuable in the future, then yeah, maybe this is a cool thing that somebody turned it into this used bookstore and you can go for it. So yeah, it was an interesting thing, and it does build into this conversation. And one thing I do want to say, you know, relatively early in this conversation too, because I think this is such a perfect idea. In fact, I'm going to take this and maybe say it in every single show. And that is in that lesson 191, which is I am the Holy Son of God himself. In one of the paragraphs, it's the first sentence of the fifth paragraph, it says, but let today's idea find a place among your thoughts. And the reason I love that is because that's, I think, content-wise, what I really want to encourage everybody to do when they're considering A Course in Miracles, or maybe when they're considering anything. You know, it's not a matter of maybe you're not resonating, maybe you're not embracing it, but can you let the idea find a place within your thoughts? And then see what it does. Mm-hmm. See if it keeps coming back to you. See if it resonates with truth. See if you're attracted to it. But I think I just dismiss something out of hand. Mm-hmm. You know, just totally, I just dismiss it out of hand. In fact, here's an odd example, but I have admitted to kind of being a QVC addict. And I don't know exactly what that means. I mean, and it's kind of a weird way. I mean, it politically, it had to do with when the news was just all so terrifying at one point, politically and everything else. I thought I just have to have something else on in the background because I used to have the news on. You know, I used to have MSNBC. And even though it wasn't on in my office as I worked, when I'd walk through the house or walk back to the kitchen and get a drink or coffee or something, I always wanted to just kind of see what was going on. So I would keep the TV on. Well, I couldn't do that anymore. I mean, like I said, it was more that it was terrifying. So I was flipping through channels and I thought, oh, here's one, you know, I can just keep this on in the background. So that's kind of how I found QVC. But one of the things that I really like about it is, and this sounds odd, but I feel like I'm always picking up tips about how to do radio. And even though QVC is TV, obviously, and let me take a drink, I would listen to how they handled callers, you know, people calling in or asking questions. Because I thought these are professionals, and some of them obviously were better than others. But just even the other night, they had a caller. And what I noticed is there was a guest demonstrating a product. And then there was the host of the show. And the caller called in and she wanted something specific. And truthfully, the QVC host was missing the point. And so the demonstrator said, okay, this is what she wants, and then gave a very clear answer. But what I realized is the host wasn't doing it on purpose, but she was jumping to conclusions about what the caller was asking.
Uh-huh.
And so she kept giving her the wrong answer, you know, and the caller kept going, but no, what I want to know is, you know, and it kind of goes back to this. When we just close our minds automatically, or when we think, okay, I know exactly where you're going here, Bruce. I know exactly what you're going to say. Then I'm not listening. And I'm not letting the idea find a place among my thoughts. And I thought, so here even this professional host was doing that. She was just jumping to conclusions about what she thought the caller was asking, when that's not what even I knew. It's like, that's not what she's asking you. You know, so that's what I want to say to everybody. And like I said, I just may use that idea every week. Let this idea find a place among your thoughts and see where it fits. See, does it resonate with you that you're really looking to shift your identity, to find your identity, to understand what life is about? You know, just let some of these ideas find a place in your head. So I just wanted to say that, Bruce.
Well, yeah, that's so important too, because it really is a free will and accord type of curriculum here, and it's and of course says, you know, it's a required course, but the time that we take it is voluntary. And Ken in I think An Absence from Felicity, which is also a great read if you're, you know, a course student wanting to get a little deeper insights into how the course came about, and he has some really good commentary on the Ur text and the previous versions of the course, which are also on major portions of that are also on the FIP site on acim.org. If you look through the archives,
okay. All
there's
right.
a lot of good material on that actually. In the Absence of Felicity, he talks about. I think I just derailed my train of thought. On the topic of you know, the free will, you know, maybe it wasn't an absence. Well, in terms of the, maybe not an Absence from Felicity, but there was something that I remember reading and Ken commenting on, that it, in terms of one of the early in the text, actually, where Jesus says, you know, if I were to, you know, interfere with your free will, basically I would be violating one of the most fundamental laws there is, the law of cause and effect, which is really saying that, you know, each of us appears to have an individual decision-making faculty. And that really, you know, it gets really close to the one of the core pivotal ideas about identity. And that is, you know, we all have to make up our own minds in our own time as to what our identity is. And I think ultimately we'll, at least my perspective, we'll all choose at some point when we're ready to let go of the dysfunctional identity that's the SSS, or seemingly separate self, as I call it, that is, doesn't serve us, you know, but not because of any sense of sacrifice, but recognition, but rather a recognition that that little S self, the lowercase I identity, that has everything to do with what's in it for me, really doesn't serve us. I mean, we really aren't ever happy when we're following slavishly the dictates of that ego thinking that makes it, you know, it's all about me, what's in it for me. And not that there's anything wrong with that. It's just that it's just a dysfunctional, ineffective. And if you just look at it from a scientific point of view, even if it's, you know, what's effective, what's not effective. Well, if you track the results over time of the thinking that it's all about me as a separate self, and what that the end results of those, you know, lines of thinking have, you know, delivered, you discover, you know, not so much in terms of the results I want. And if we're honest with ourselves, I think over time. So, I mean, you know, we could, you know, talk until the cows come home about what we found to be helpful, but every person has to come to that conclusion themselves. And I think that's where it's really important to not push, our agenda, and as well as, truly listening, as you were pointing out, to what other people are saying, and recognizing when things are resonating, when they're not, and the kindest thing to say to someone in one situation might be completely different than someone else in a different situation, depending on the receptivity of, you know, that sort of thing. And you know, equally important within that context is trusting our inner guidance to know, you know, when to speak and when to be quiet.
Right.
So, because, you know, we can kind of tell, you know, if something's going to go over like a lead balloon kind of thing, if we're just kind of paying attention. And that, again, is paying attention to how do we feel in every moment. Are we at peace or not? And we can kind of, before we ever think a thought, let alone open our mouths, we kind of know where something's going to go. If we say something that is going to ruffle feathers in a way that is helpful, or a way that is, you know, divisive and antagonistic, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, but
yeah. And yet some of us, we are provocateurs, aren't we? That's our job.
That's part of the agenda. And I think that's why it's really important and a very helpful idea in A Course in Miracles, and so much of Ken Wapnick's work, which is brilliant, is basically saying that if we can just look at the contents of our mind and also how we express that outwardly, verbally and nonverbally and otherwise, if we can just watch the contents of our mind without condemnation, without judgment, without criticism, and do the same thing with, you know, our perceptions of others, which are really just our projections of our own thinking, we're making tremendous progress toward shifting that identity to a shared interest. And we become better listeners because we're not so concerned about the what's in it for me when we suspend that blathering going on in our ego, this 24/7, morose director's cut in our mind's DVD, you know, and we could turn that off though, or at least turn the volume down. And so at some point, I think it just becomes this little whisper after a while. And we still see the text scrolling across the bottom of our mind screen of the ego's interpretation of things, which is always dismally dreary. But if we can just watch that and begin to, you know, have a little gentle smile and an inner laugh when we see that happening again, because we know it doesn't work, we can just say, "Hey, I'm watching this. I see your blather ego. I recognize what you're saying, but I'm not going there. I'm gonna side with my inner kindness teacher, who says that ultimately there are no sides if right. we're one. And if I take a partisan or a divisive or an adversarial perspective on life, I'm just gonna be picking up an invisible sword in my mind, and I'm gonna get bloody, you know? I mean but we don't have to. It's not required. We don't have to take up ego's battles, and when we recognize that identity really is the source of so much misery for ourselves and everyone else, eventually we say, you know, I think I could choose peace instead of this.
Right. Well, and just that whole idea that we do live in a dualistic system. Mm-hmm. You know, this is not easy. This is not easy, you know. Oh, in fact, even in the journey home, Ken even said, I mean, I often laugh when he says this, but he goes, anybody who wants to tell you this path is peace and light and bliss and whatever, he goes, give him this passage. Yeah. Like, okay, Ken, you know, but of course that's in the middle of the book, so he doesn't tell you that right up front. Right. But literally, anybody who's going to tell you this is an easy path, and you know, then you better pay attention to some of these passages, what it's really saying, because the closer you get to really kind of unmasking the ego, then you know you're really faced with what does this really mean. And he also brings up comments which I think are really true. He said, you know, I've had so many course students come up to me and say, you know, I really don't want to study this course because, you know, I don't want everything to disappear. I don't want the universe to disappear. I, you know, I don't want to forget my life, and you know, doing this course is pretty boring. And you know, I thought back to when I was a kid, and I will admit, you know, when you think about what heaven is like, don't you kind of think boring? You know,
well, that's certainly a picture that we've been presented, isn't it?
Yes, yes. It's sort of like there's nothing interesting. I mean, what are you, you know, sitting up in the clouds and it's the commercials want you to believe eating cream cheese or something. You know, it's like it just seems a little boring. And so, you know, don't be fooled into thinking that it's easy. But on the other hand, it's a step by step approach that you can do very easily. And in fact, I want to read a little bit of chapter 21 okay. from the text. And it's called Reason and Perception, because I thought this really fit into our conversation today. And that is, it says, projection makes perception. The world you see is what you gave it. Nothing more than that. But though it is no more than that, it is not less. And that, I think, is very important. You know, it's not less than that either. Mm-hmm. Therefore, to you, it is important. It is the witness to your state of mind, the outside picture of an inward condition. As a man thinketh, so does he perceive. Therefore, seek not to change the world, but choose to change your mind about the world. Perception is a result, not a cause. And I think that goes in because it goes back to the identity. Mm-hmm. If our belief system is that we're a victim, or if our belief system is people take advantage of me, I need to protect myself, I need to defend myself, then what are we going to see? You know, and I mean, it's if you're willing to kind of, I don't know if it's right to say make a game of it, you will see it all over the place. You know, watch what somebody says, and it is a complete projection of what their belief is. And it's like, it's so, I mean, I've heard so many this week and some that were just amazing, because if you would have asked me, what is this person about? I would have given you a certain phrase. And then somebody literally that day said to me, oh, well, you know what she accused me of is blah, blah, blah. And I said, that's exactly what she does. That's exactly what she does. And so in some ways it is funny, because then we can look at ourselves and recognize, I get up in the morning and what is my expectation? What do I think is going to happen according to who I am and what my beliefs are? Well, it just starts rolling out. And in fact, even isn't it in chapter 30, I think, of the text, it says, this is how to have a good day. And it says, of course, it helps if you get the mindset right in the first place. Yeah. So once again, it's so funny. It's like, and by the way, if you start right, then you've got a better chance of, you know, of having the kind of day that you want. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it goes right back to identity. And if we, you know, just from this statement, it's a witness to your state of mind, the outside picture of an inward condition. And it's not about blaming yourself, judging yourself. It's about just being the neutral observer and looking at it. If this is what's coming back, then what, you know, because we're all about trying to prove to ourselves that our opinion is correct. So if I'm a victim, if I'm not responsible and everybody is, you know, not kind to me, then what is it that I'm going to see? You know, I'm going to find every witness in the universe that shows me that I'm correct about that decision or that choice.
Yep. Self-fulfilling prophecy, huh?
Yes, absolutely. So it's sort of like, you know, we can go, oops, there I went again. I wanted to feel sorry for myself, or I wanted to, you know, I wanted to take on an identity that's just not true. So there again, if you want to, for those of you who, you know, want to see it astrologically and kind of work with Chiron, I think that's a really good idea. Because Chiron as the wounded healer does teach you, you are not the victim of the world you see. You can change this. In Aries, you can find a self-identity that is powerful, that, you know, that feels loved, that feels supported, that feels nurtured. But you don't do it by sitting around going, yep, I'm the victim of the world I see.
And interestingly, when you mentioned Aries and identity, I was thinking, years ago, I was in a group called Creative Dynamics, and we studied a little bit of astrological symbolism. And I was thinking about how on a new level, essentially, if Aries represents, you know, the birth or, you know, the spring blossoming of new life, then if on a higher level, what if that is really in terms of integration, if you take the 12 signs of the zodiac, the 12 disciples, whatever metaphors you like, but find an identity that really is the Christ identity, that is the amalgam or the integration of all the truth behind all those things, then you know, on a new level, if you will, that identity then becomes the identity of shared interests rather than separate interests.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that really speaks to what you were talking about, you know, with the first part of chapter 21, that, you know, it's the outside picture of an inward condition. The inward condition, of course, is our choice of teachers, which is exactly identical to our choice of identity. And later on in that first part of that chapter is one of my favorite sections, the Forgotten Song, which, you know, tells us that our cues for inference are wrong, which I always get, that's one of my favorite sentences in the whole book, is like, okay, if I'm basically believing in the feedback that I made up and forgot that I made it up as being, and believing the propaganda that it suggests that I'm a prisoner of a world that is not so fun, then I'm going to be, you know, as it says at the end of the fourth paragraph in that section, I'm going to feel incomplete and bitterly deprived.
Yeah.
You know, because the identity of the separate self, the seemingly separate self, really is an identity of deprivation. How could there be anything complete about something that is an enormous subtraction from all that is? Just like, you know, a water molecule that seems to believe that it can be pulled out from the ocean, and or maybe, you know, wrapped around this little bubble of identity that really doesn't exist, and say, I'm this special molecule of water, you know, forgetting that, you know, the real true identity is the ocean that we all are. And, you know, it's this all-encompassing awareness that we can't get at directly, but we can certainly relate to those that are familiar to us that seem to be separate and recognize our commonality. And that's, I think that's why Ken Wapnick, in his commentary on the Manual for Teachers, The Journey Through the Manual, he prefaces that, and it really struck me and it stuck with me, that the two concepts that he shares in that book over and over again are the idea of shared interest, and then, of course, the, you know, trusting our inner kindness teacher, aka Holy Spirit, Jesus of Course in Miracles, if you will, that symbolic awareness that we took with us into the dream, that is our real identity. That's the identity that we're maturing into, we're growing into, to where the integrity and the strength and the compassion that identity has really is the precursor for the qualities that are expressed in that forgotten song, that, you know, there's no break or limit anywhere. Everything is joined in perfect continuity. We don't really have a sense of what that means truly, but we can have glimmers of it when we have shared interests and when we can truly listen to what other people are saying and feel genuine compassion, not in a pitying way, but recognize that, you know, we all truly are, you know, doing laughable things that really need not be. And we can afford to be kind to each other because we all have these lapses, and some of them, you know, tremendously, tremendous duration, where we think we're the victims of the world we see, and forgetting that we made it, forgetting that, you know, this double shield of oblivion, as one of the workbook lessons suggests, is, you know, we made up a body that has a name. Here's that fake identity that you know, it was certainly. The Course doesn't ask us to not use that identity and to not do the appropriate normal things. But if just, like you say, just really question, just consider the idea that just maybe that identity isn't really all of the whole story. It's not all there is. And if we can look at the world and our bodies and everything in it, the world that seems to be everything else but us as part of us, then that starts to dissolve the boundary between me and everything else and everyone else by the shared interest. And then it goes back to the mind. So that's the outer shield of oblivion, the world and bodies and personas and all that thing. And it goes back to the mind and it's like, well, what is really the core idea behind the belief in seemingly separate selves? And that is the idea of an identity that's separate. Not only from mm-hmm. everyone else, but an identity that's separate from our Creator. And again, you know, whether or not you have any kind of religious inclinations or not, the idea that there's something greater than yourself that is all encompassing. You know, I think even a lot of atheists could probably say, well, there's got to be something, you know, and a recognition there's something that does seem to, connect everything. And there's probably a lot of physicists that would certainly say, gee, you know, that, you know, quantum entanglement, just for starters, suggests that there's something outside of what we, you know, can figure out with our science that shows that things are connected. Because when you take a, you know, a pair of electrons, and you change the axis of spin on one of those electrons, no matter how far apart those two electrons are, the angle, the orientation of the spin on the paired electron will change to match that instantaneously. Yeah. That's not the speed of light or 100 times or a trillion times the speed of light. That's instantaneously. So, but there's nothing, you know, supposedly this faster than the speed of light. So how does that work? Well, the only thing that kind of makes sense is, well, maybe space and time as constructs that seem to be reinforced by an enormous amount of propaganda in this world. What if those premises are incorrect? And that's why, you know, as we were talking about earlier, that this is not an easy course. It's not an easy curriculum because we have so much apparent evidence to the contrary that suggests that we're these separate selves. But there's this nagging in the best possible way, this, you know, this beautifully haunting voice within us metaphorically that keeps saying, you know, there must be a better way.
Yes.
I don't have to suffer. What if I don't have to suffer through everything and every last little minutia of you know, this dream world? What if there really is a way to look at it that, you know, is beyond the mundane, that really does have a peace that is so wonderful that we you know, our propaganda machines that we call egos have painted as this boring thing, you know? If that idea of a heaven that doesn't change is boring, maybe it's because we're so far removed from the peace and what that the true implications of what that peace really means to us that we don't have for all intents and purposes, a clue of what we have seemingly thrown away, but truly in truth could never do.
Mm-hmm.
Should we read a little of that lesson 191?
Yes. And in fact, but before you do, the one other thing that I wanted to mention is, you know, having been raised Catholic and gone through a lot of religious stuff, sometimes I balk when I hear things like I am the Holy Son of God.
Oh, of course. Of course.
however, yeah. This is what I want to say. Intellectually or somewhere in my heart, I do want to believe that. But it's just those old Christian words, you know, that sometimes you go, yeah, blah, blah, blah. But I think what I want to encourage people, once again, let these ideas find a place within you. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, maybe, you know, you don't jump to this. Oh, yeah, I'm the Holy Son of God. I am the Holy Child of God. But you know what? Can you begin to see yourself as a decision maker? Because that's a very important idea in A Course in Miracles as well, is getting back to that place. The way we kind of remove ourselves as feeling like a victim is to keep going back and back and back until we realize I am a decision maker. I am a script writer. I'm a decision maker about what I will believe. And, you know, we talk about the double shields of oblivion, but just the layers and layers and layers of stuff that keep us from ever remembering that we are decision makers. So if you can't grab onto I'm the Holy Son of God, maybe you can grab onto I am a decision maker. Nice. You know, I am not a victim that's just being like thrown around, you know, in the wind. I'm a decision maker. You know, that alone, I think, will open some doors. So there again, yeah. So let's read some of this lesson 191.
Okay. Before I do, you just said something that triggered a kind of a fun aha for me in terms of two metaphors that I find really helpful. The decision maker in Ken Wapnick's charts that he's drawn countless times, he sometimes depicts this decision-making faculty in the mind as a blue dot. Mm-hmm. And above that in his charts is the perfect oneness that we've never left but have dreamt that we left. And that's the creator awareness that we can't possibly label or constrain or define. But that's like the ocean. So here's this little drop that's fallen into this little pocket in the bottom of the ocean, and this little blue dot. And so we're down beneath us. Actually, what kind of ties into is I saw a really interesting oceanography a presentation the other evening, and talk about the creatures that live in the mud at the bottom of the ocean, and how there's more variety in terms of biology than anywhere else on Earth, and just in the bottom of the ocean. It just kind of blew me away. But anyway, so we're kind of like these little water droplets that, because we've burrowed into the floor of the ocean, we think we're these separate things. But what if you know, if we just kind of allow ourselves to be buoyed up a little bit and lifted mentally back to that realm of pure awareness, we can, you know, not in a religious way, but look at what's being said here and say, well, what if maybe we're all this thing, not me as a separate self, because that obviously just kind of clashes tremendously. If anybody who's honest with themselves, it's like, huh, the Bruce that has this photo and a driver's license and this history. And no, it's not talking about this. It's talking about the awareness that we all have that's, you know, profoundly one in a way that we can't even fathom. Another oceanographic that pun there, I guess. Mm-hmm. but you know, what if that awareness really is, you know, our way out of this, you know, the depths of insanity that we
right.
think. Yeah, yeah. But I like the blue dot being a water drop. You know, so I'm gonna work with that. Thank you, CA,
okay.
for that.
Okay, you're welcome.
So I'll read the first paragraph.
Okay.
Again, you know, just if you can suspend, you know, any religious baggage that you have, and I'm thinking most of us in the Western world probably have a lot, just, you know, let the meaning behind the words wash over you. So it starts out, here is your declaration of release from bondage of the world. And here as well is all the world released. You do not see what you have done by giving to the world the role of jailer to the Son of God. What could it be but vicious and afraid, fearful of shadows, punitive and wild, lacking all reason, blind, insane with hate? Well, if you're a little, you know, bottom of the ocean creature, and all these things in the dark crawling around that can get you and you know, snag you up, because you've turned yourself into this little something or other roaming around in the mud, you know, that's a pretty scary place to be, you know, and a lot of pressure there too. Do you want to go on?
Sure. Do you want? Okay. So what have you done that this should be your world? What have you done that this is what you see? Deny your own identity, and this is what remains. You look on chaos and proclaim it is yourself. And I love this line. There is no sight that fails to witness this to you. So once again, what you think is going on around you, you will continue to find witnesses to those beliefs. There exactly. is no sound that does not speak of frailty within you and without. No breath you draw that does not seem to bring you nearer death. No hope you hold but will dissolve in tears.
Yeah. And I think when reading these parodies of the ego that Jesus puts in his curriculum, I think it's important to have a little smile and recognize he's trying not to laugh, you know, hysterically uncontrollably yeah. at our belief in the ego, because he knows it's not true. So he's basically, you know, not mincing any words by sharing us that, you know, we really think this is this horrible, tragic, you know, existence that's our only identity. We think that's the only identity we have to choose from. But he's saying, no, I'm going to paint this picture for you to show you what you believe. And how convincing you've made it for yourself, because all this propaganda machinery that we call space, time, and the universe really is solely for the purpose of keeping us enslaved and in this film noir matrix. This dystopian nightmare that just has no basis in truth. And he says, you know, just look at it, see how, you know, in all of its gory detail. You don't have to, you might recoil in terror now and then, but if you can just kind of learn to be able to look at it and eventually just crack a little smile. It's like, wait a minute, I bought this. You know, and it's like, oh, maybe there's another way of looking at this. You know, maybe I could see peace instead of this, right?
That's right. And I'm looking at the clock and realizing we can't read the rest of those paragraphs. Okay. But this is lesson 191 for anybody who wants to go look at it. But in summary, one of the things I would say is he continues to go, deny your identity, and this is what happens. Deny your identity, and this is what it looks like, guys. Yep. But then the beginning of the fourth paragraph, he says, what is it except a game you play in which you think identity can be denied? So, you know, that's it. Just open up your mind a little bit and go, what is my identity? What am I identifying with? Why do I believe that? You know, I had given this illusion or this analogy earlier. You know, for my whole life, I lived with the idea I couldn't do math. Well, you know what? That's not true. I'm actually pretty good with numbers. But, you know, if you would have asked me all the way through college, I'm not good at math. I'm not good at math. I'm not good at math. It took actually being confronted and somebody going, well, that sounds like math to me, you know, for me to challenge that idea. So.
Looks like math, smells like math, it must be math.
That's right. So what do you mean you're not good at math? And I mean, and I was like kind of dumbfounded, like, oh, yeah, I guess, you know. So that's what we're doing. We're challenging whether you want to see it as Chiron and Aries, you want to see it as A Course in Miracles, spirituality, whatever it is. We are challenging our identity, and we should challenge any belief that tells us that we are disempowered, that we are disenfranchised, that we are separate, and that there is no good in our lives. That's what we ought to be challenging. Exactly. So, Bruce, thank you. And what are your ending comments for today's show?
Oh, I was just going to suggest that, you know, on a perhaps unconscious level, but we can make it conscious, we've picked up the sword against ourselves, and you know, we can put it down anytime we want, and use the identity that we really all are and have and share, and that's one that leads to peace. So anyway, thank you, C.A. The only other comment I was going to suggest is we have a Miracle Share conference coming up in October. It's the third weekend in October. I think it's like the 19th, 20th, and 21st. And they didn't do one last year, but there's going to be another one this year, and I'm going to be assisting with that a little bit again and having fun with that. So the website hasn't been updated yet, but just if you want to mark your calendar for October 19, 20, and 21 this next fall, it's going to be a lot of fun.
And where is it going to be?
It's online. It's an online
conference. Oh!
Yeah.
Oh,
and
wow.
I've participated in the last three, and they're great fun. And I highly encourage everyone who's the slightest bit interested. And I'll have more details in future conversations.
Okay. And yeah. I assume that it'll be on your blog.
Yes, absolutely.
So I'm putting that in the chat room right now.
Okay.
So that people can, if you haven't connected with Bruce that way, you'll be able to do that.
ACIMblog.com.
Yep, that's right. Okay, well, okay, and there it is in the chat room if you ever want to go over there and check that out. I know some of you are in the chat room, and thanks for being here today, all of you.
No,
I really appreciate your comments and just joining us today. Yes. So thanks for being here, and Bruce, thank you so much for being
here
today.
Thank you, CA, and to all listeners. Yeah.
And I want to say thanks to Scott Weaver, our producer, and thanks to the whole One-Two family who makes One-Two Radio possible, and Mark Hessen. And I want to encourage you to stay tuned because we have a new live show after this one. It's I think this will be its third week. So please join Elisa and for that show. And I guess the only other thing is until next week, relax and wear loose clothes. You have been listening to the Friday Morning Show with C.A. Brooks and my guest, Bruce Rawls, on One-Two Radio, where we're changing the way you think about your identity.
We are how we treat each other when the day is done. We are peace. We are